Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our shiur. Good
morning.
Good morning, good morning. Okay, resounding good morning. The topic I'd like to speak about today is halachic and also a mussar topic as well, so a little unusual in that area, but very much connected to the parasha yesterday. So I thought it was a good opportunity to discuss this, and that is the inyan of choshed b'ksheirim, of suspecting a person who was held to be of a misdeed, who was held to be a upstanding person. So the connection, the parasha we have, that the Torah says that after Hashem came to Moshe Rabbeinu and said that, you know, he appointed him to be the shliach to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim. So after Hashem put forth the whole proposal, so Moshe said, we have it here on the top of the page, Bayan Moshe Bayomer Vehein Lo Yaminu Li, they're not going to believe me. Vayishmu b'koli, they're not going to listen to what I'm saying. Ki yomru lo nirei lecha Hashem, they're going to say that Hashem didn't appear to you. What is all of this talk? Right, Hashem didn't appear to you. Now I regret that the next pasuk is not on the sheet, but it says in the very next pasuk, Vayomer lo Hashem maze biyadecha. Hashem asked Moshe, what is it that's in your hand? Vayomer mata, and Moshe said, it's a staff. The pasuk, if one looks in the Chumash, so the words mazeh biyadecha spelled as two words, mazeh, what is this? However, in the Sefer Torah, the ksiv, the way it's written, is one word, mazeh biyadecha. What is the significance of that? So Rashi here on the sheet tells us that l'kach nichtav teva achas, that the reason why the pasuk wrote it as one word, the reason why the Torah wrote the word mazeh, which is two words, the Torah put them together, is lidrosh, is to have the following interpretation, that it's mizeh shebiyodcha, from this which is in your hand, atachayev lulkos, from the staff that's in your hand, you're chayev to have malchus, you really should be getting lashes. Why? Because you are suspicious of innocent people. You're suspicious of people who are ksherim, who are not innocent. That's not the right translation. Ksherim means of good people. These are people who are good people. So what are you saying? They're not going to believe me. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, they're not going to believe you. Tell me I'm going to take them out of Mitzrayim. Who says they're going to believe me? Right? So Hashem says, no, that's not correct. That you choshet b'ksherim. And because of that, you're really obligated to be to have lashes, which is really a remarkable thing when you think about it. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was first coming back after many years away in Midian, and he was coming with a very remarkable, extraordinary type of message to the Klal Yisrael, something which seemed unbelievable. So why should this be altogether? And it's an interesting thing. So we'll see in a moment. So if one looks at the Gemara. It's not on the sheet here, but the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos basically elaborates on this very point and says also that we find that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu that one of the signs, he said, what Moshe said, what, give me signs, give me something that I could show, that I could use to prove that I am in fact the shliach, I'm in fact the messenger. So Hashem gave him two signs and then a third sign. The first sign was that he threw his staff down and became a snake. The second staff is that he said, put your hand into your pocket, put your hand, inside your coat, and then take it out. And sure enough, that when that happened, it says in the Pasuk, that Moshe Rabbeinu took out his hand, and it was white from leprosy. Why was it white from leprosy? So the Gemara in Shabbos, expounding upon the point that we just mentioned, says that the reason for this is because Moshe was worthy, so to speak, of leprosy, deserved to have leprosy. Why? Because that is the punishment that comes to a person who speaks Lashon Hara. A person who says Lashon Hara is punished with tzaras. So Moshe Rabbeinu had that happen to him. Where was the Lashon Hara? What's the reason? Says the Gemara, because of the fact, again, because of this idea that he went ahead and he suspected the Klal Yisrael. He said something, he made a direct statement, a declaration to Hashem that they're not going to listen to me. They're not going to listen to me. So Rabban Shalom said, how do you know I'm not going to listen to you? B'ksherim. So you're choshed b'ksherim. So again, the question that we have in understanding this is it seems a little bit hard to grasp that that should be true. After all, what Moshe was saying to them was something that was almost incredible to believe, right? That he's going to take them out of Mitzrayim. Here they're the slaves of Egypt. They're on the lowest level of society. And the idea that they're going to rise up and walk out was astonishing. So why should it be that this is considered choshek d'ksherim? So the Mashah, in his commentary to the Gemara in Shabbos, says that the explanation here is because Moshe had the Klal Yisrael had been told in advance that there was a certain sign, there were certain words that were going to be uttered by the person who was going to come to redeem them. And those words were the words pakod pakadati, that Hashem says, I remember, I'm aware of what's going on with you, and I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim. So Moshe was charged by Hashem to say those words. So therefore, based on that, based on the fact that they had been told at the very beginning of the exile, they had been told, we find in last week's Parashah, Parashas Vayechi, that this was the word that was passed down. So already there was reason to think that they would believe it, and therefore Hashem took him to task that he's choshek d'ksherim. Okay, so I thought that based on this, it would be worthwhile to investigate a little bit, because we live today, especially in times which are people are cheering for the share, I guess, we live in times that are where everything comes out, that things come out in the news and things come out on the internet, and everyone is very judgmental. And in particular, we seem to live in a time where there's almost like a desire and excitement to tear down people who previously have good reputations. And the second anything happens that's even the slightest bit of a suspicion, right away we jump to conclusions and tear people to shreds. So I thought that it would be worthwhile investigating this inyan. So this is the idea that we find, that Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu that you are choshek b'ksherim. Now, a similar thing is found in the Mishnayos in Maseches Yuma. It's actually here on the sheet. The Mishnah in Maseches Yuma tells us that, if one is familiar, the first parak of Maseches Yuma speaks about the preparation of the Kohen Gadol in the week before Yom Kippur. Right, the week before the Mishnah, Maseches Yuma begins with the words Shivas Yomim Kodim Yom Kippurim Afrishim Kohen Gadol, that the Kohen Gadol would be taken 7 days before Yom Kippur to a location by the Beis Hamikdash, and he would be prepped for the all-important Avoda that was to take place on Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah here tells us that there was a whole process that took place, a whole procedure, and it says Masru Ziknei Bezdin L'Ziknei Kohuna, that first he went to the elders of the Beis Din, and then the elders of the Beis Din would tell him to go speak to the elders of the Kohanim. The Halu Beis Aftinas, and they brought him into a place called Beis Aftinas, which was by the Beis Hamikdash. The Hishpiyuhu, and they would make him swear. The Niftru V'Hochulam, they would make him swear, and then he would take that Shvuah. What did they make him swear? So the Mishnah continues, V'amrullah, they would say, Ishi Kohen Gadol. Alright, our master, the Kohen Gadol, Anu Shluchei Bezdin, V'atar Shlucheinu Shliach Bezdin. You are essentially a messenger of all the Kohanim and of the Bezdin, and in reality of all of Klal Yisrael. Mashbin Anu Alecha, V'misha Shokhan Shmo, B'bayis Hazeh, that we hereby administer an oath to you by the one who resides in this bayis, the one who resides in the Beis Hamikdash, meaning by Hashem's name, that we make you swear, shelo tishane davar mikol ma she'amarnu lecha, that all the instructions that we have given you in the past week, you will not change. You will do exactly as we told you. Now, why was this important? Because the Mishnah is talking here about the era of the second Beis Hamikdash. So we know historically, in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, so the Klal Yisrael, the Jewish nation, had autonomy in Eretz Yisrael. They were able to do what they want. They had their own kings. Of course, there was a great deal of chaos because you had the division in the Malchus between the Malchus Yisrael and the Malchus Yehuda and so forth. But the Kohanim Gedolim were appointed in the manner that they should have been appointed. The person who did the Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, who did the all-important service that ultimately would achieve a kapara, forgiveness, for the Klal Yisrael, was always a tzaddik. It was always a righteous person. That's who it was supposed to be. But in the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, everything was different. Because, first of all, for most of the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, the nation of Klal Yisrael, living in Eretz Yisrael, did not have its own autonomy. They were under foreign influences. Starting from the beginning, starting from the Persian government that gave them permission to rebuild the son of Esther and Achashverosh, and then moving along into the Greek era and so forth, up till the Nes of Hanukkah. And then after that, there was a certain autonomy, but then again, the Romans got involved, and again, the Klal Yisrael did not have free choice. So during that era, there were a great many difficulties, and aside from the fact that there was no autonomy, there was, throughout the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, the movement of Tzedukim. Tzedukim means the people who did not subscribe to the Torah Shebaal Peh, they only accepted what it said in the Chumash, and they did not accept the teachings of the rabbis and the interpretations of the Chazal. So there were many clashes that took place between the Tzedukim and the Chazal, who were called the Prushim. Many, many clashes, and there were a lot of problems. One of them was the fact that, generally speaking, the Tzedukim were the wealthier, more influential people, and the Prushim were not that way. There were a lot of problems. So among the problems were the fact that the appointment of a Kohen Gadol was no longer made based on a person's merit, but rather, in many, many cases, was based on a political decision by the government. And therefore, even though it started out in a good way, started out with Shimon HaTzadik and so forth, you had a very righteous person at the very outset, but past that point, it was common that the Kohen Gadol was appointed not based on his own righteousness, but based on his connections, his political connections. And therefore, it was possible for there to be many issues could arise. One of the most prominent, if not the most prominent issue, was the interpretation of a pasuk in Parshas Acharei Mos, where the Torah says, "Ki ba'onon eroi al akaporis." The Torah says that with a cloud I will appear, Hashem said, on the top of the Aron, which is a reference to the fact that the Kohen Gadol would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur and offer a special ketoros, a special incense offering in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So on this point, there was a tremendous dispute between the Tzedukim and the Prushim. The Tzedukim interpreted the pasuk that Ki Ba'ana Ne'erol HaKaporos means that the smoke of the Ketores has to already be rising before the Kohen Gadol walked into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, meaning that the spices of the Ketores had to be poured onto the fire pan, which caused it to smoke up, before the Kohen Gadol entered. However, the Chazal did not see it that way. The Chazal had a Kabbalah from Har Sinai that it was not supposed to be that way, but rather that the Kohen Gadol was supposed to first make it inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So this was a major, major point of conflict, and obviously there was no way that anybody could verify what was going on because nobody would accompany the Kohen Gadol, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, you really had to trust the person. So when you had the Kohen Gadol, so this whole shvua, this oath that was administered to the Kohen Gadol, so it was a serious thing. They didn't have to do this in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash because they knew they were dealing with tzaddikim. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, they knew that oftentimes they were not dealing with learned people. They're not all the Kohanim Gadol. Many of them were not learned, and they might have been good people, but they were not learned, and therefore they felt that he had to be trained and he had to be administered this oath. So this was what was given to the Kohen Gadol right before Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah here continues and says that after the Kohen Gadol took this oath, hu poreshu bocha, he would turn away and cry, v'hein parshinu bochen, and the people, the elders of the kahuna, would also cry. Why was everybody crying? What was so emotional about this oath? So the Gemara explains that he would cry because of the fact that they suspected him of being a tzduki. They suspected him of following the tzdukim, and in a case where he in fact was not, so he felt very bad. You know, you this is what you think of me. On the other hand, so why were they crying, says the Gemara? That the reason why the Zikne Kahuna cried was because they were choshed b'ksherim, was because of the fact that they were suspecting a person who was a kosher. In other words, as far as they knew, he was going to comply. They trained him the week before Yom Kippur, everything he needed to do. And now they're giving him this oath because of the severity of the situation, but they had to be choshed b'ksherim. They couldn't take any chances here because of the fact that the avoda on Yom Kippur, the service of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, was directly what achieved the kapara, the atonement for the Klal Yisrael. So you couldn't play around with this. This had to be done correctly. And nobody could watch him. You couldn't have somebody accompany him. You couldn't have a representative of the Beis Din walk with him, because nobody could go into those places other than the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, the result was they had this oath and people cried. So again, we have this idea of choshed b'ksherim, that they suspected a person who was a kosher, who was presumed as a good person. The presumption is that he's a good person. And because of that, they had to cry. Okay, so now, the question would present itself to us. So here you have, with Moshe Rabbeinu being criticized for being choshed b'ksherim, and you have the Ziknei Beis Din choshed b'ksherim. So the question is, so what does that mean? That means that every time I see any person, any Jew that I see, I have to right away assume he's a tzaddik. So that would mean that if a fellow walked up to me in the street and said, hey, you want to go into business with me, you know, whatever, why don't you just give me $100,000 right now and I'll make you a rich man, that you have to right away hand over the money, assuming you have it, you have to hand over the money in a case like that. And well, I can't suspect that he's a bad guy. After all, it's choshed b'ksherim. At any time a person makes any sort of interaction, a person I've never seen before, I have to always assume that the person is a tzaddik. So on this point, there is a clarification given by the Rav Yo, one of the Rishonim, and he bases it on a very fascinating chazal, which you can turn over the sheet to side B. Here we have, I was not able to enlarge it, but that we have in the Shas, so we know that there are various Masechtas. So the Talmud Bavli consists of Masechtas that have Gemara. Right? Then you have the Talmud Yerushalmi, which has Gemara that was written in Eretz Yisrael, and some of the Masechtas are the same, and some of them are Masechtas, the Mishnayos are the same, but there are Masechtas that have Gemara in Yerushalmi that don't have it in the Bavli. Like, for example, we just had Shemitah last year, so in the Masechtas Shviyas, the Masechtah that deals with Shemitah, so in the Talmud Bavli there is no Gemara. However, in the Talmud Yerushalmi, there is Gemara. So that's what we have. Okay, now, in addition to that, there are also what's called Masechtas Ketanos. There are certain small Masechtas that are found, that are printed in the back of the Gemara, Masechtas Avodah Zarah, that they are called Masechtas Ketanos, and they generally don't have Gemara. And the question is, it's unclear, or at least to me, who composed them. Some of them were composed by the Gaonim, were put together, but they're statements from the Chazal. It's unclear to me exactly when they were written. But one of them is called Masechtas Kala, and it says in this Masechta Ketana the following. If you look at where I have the arrow marked off on the left-hand side of the page. So the Gemara says, the Chazal say here, there's a period in the middle of the line. Maisa b'Rib Yeshua. A story took place with Rib Yeshua, Shehoya Achsanya Etzlo, that Rib Yeshua used to take in guests. He would always be a person to be a Baal Achnosis Archim, and he would bring in people to his house. So it says, Ba Adam Echad. So one day a man came, Nasam lo achila ushasiya. So Reb Yeshua gave him food and drink. The Halel Aliyah. The man wanted to sleep, he wanted to stay overnight. So Reb Yeshua said, fine, I have upstairs. He had a two-story house, except that unlike today where we have a two-story house with a built-in staircase, so in the olden times, having a second story meant that you had to climb up a ladder to get up to the upper floor. So Rabbi Yeshua told him that this is where you could stay. So says the Chazal say here further. So v'natal sula mitachta, that after this man ascended to the upper floor to go to sleep, to retire for the night, so Rabbi Yeshua came and he took away the ladder. He took away the ladder so the man wouldn't be able to get down. Says the Chazal further, so it says, Ma osa adam zeh, so what did this fellow do? Omad b'chatzi alayla, he woke up in the middle of the night when Rabbi Yeshua was sleeping. Paras taliso, he took out a sheet or whatever it was, he spread it out. V'notol asakelim, and he took from Rabbi Yeshua all the kelim that he had on the upper floor, all of the items, all of the valuable items that Rabbi Yeshua had. This crook, right? This man took them all. He put them in the sheet. The karchu, he wrapped it up. He wrapped up the sheet and the karchem taliso ubikish leire. And he figured, now I'll make my escape. Rabbi Yeshua is sleeping, and it's a perfect time. I'll make my getaway. But as we know, in the old times, before electricity, they didn't have a nightlight in the hall. So it was pitch black in the house, and Rabbi Yeshua, unbeknownst to this fellow, had taken away the ladder. So this fellow thinks, okay, I'm going to go down the ladder, run out of the house with my heist. So Chazal say here further, so what happened? So Bikesh Leireit, so he wanted to go down, V'nofal, and he fell, V'nishpura Mefrakto, and he broke his bones. Broke his neck, whatever it was. He fell down. He tumbled down to the floor. It says further, L'shachris bo Rabbi Yeshua. So the next morning, Rabbi Yeshua woke up from the sleep, and lo and behold, this guy is lying there on the floor with all the valuables in his bag. So it says that Matzo, he found him. Amalei Reika, he said, you empty person. Kach osin b'nei odom shekamoscha. He said, this is what you do. You're that type of guy. So Omar lo, so he's so Omar. So this fellow responded, "Lo ha'isi odeya shenatalto sulam mitachtai. I didn't know you took away the ladder. That was I thought there was a reason why I'm spread out on the floor, immobile, is because I didn't know that you took away the ladder. So I felt I'd crash down." So he says, "Omale ain't ati odeya shanu zehirin b'chol emesh." He said, "You don't think that you don't think that I knew that already yesterday that I suspected that something was going on with you. I knew already yesterday that something was going on." Okay, now this is all it says here in the Chazal. This is the story with Rabbi Yeshua. Now clearly what we see over here is that Rabbi Yeshua suspected this person, and even though he had no reason to believe ahead of time that there was, or so it would seem, that there was anything wrong, but he wasn't taking any chances. He wasn't taking any chances. And therefore, he took away the ladder. So is this Choshet B'Ksherim? So here in the Maseches Kala, it doesn't have the punchline. But elsewhere in the Chazal, it has the punchline that what is supposed to be in such a situation is that, Olam, the Chazal say, Yehei b'nei adam l'cha kalistim, that when you see a stranger, you're supposed to view him as a crook. This is what it says. It's not in this quotation of the Chazal, but we find it elsewhere in the Masechtas Ketanos. It says this idea that people should be in your eyes like crooks. Shouldn't trust anybody. That's what it says. So here we have a head-on contradiction. You have Moshe Rabbeinu being criticized for saying that the Jewish people aren't going to believe him. You have the elders of Beis Din who are crying that they had to suspect the Kohen Gadol of possible foul play. And here we have the Tana of Yeshua, who, no problem, you know, right off the bat, suspects the person. He had no reason to think, no apparent reason to think this guy was a crook. And the Chazal come to the conclusion that he was right. That's what you're supposed to do. That you should view people, if a stranger comes to you, you should view him as a kilistim. Listim means as a robber. That's what Rabbi Yeshua did. He said he suspected this guy may be a robber. Sure enough, that's what happened. So Rabbi Yeshua did the right thing. So how could that be? Why is that not Choshet B'Ksherim? Yes. Okay, so we have to come to some sort of resolution to this situation. So if you look further, if you go down in this paragraph, the second arrow is, okay. So it says as follows. So it says, "La'olam yiyu kol adam chashud meinecha kolistim." Here's the statement. This is the statement of the Chazal, that the Chazal said, "Bnei adam chashudim alecha kolistim," that you should always view people as listim, as crooks, right? So the Chazal asked for hatnan. So the Chazal asked, they don't ask the question from Moshe, they don't ask the question from the Kohen Gadol, but they ask the question from a Mishnah in the beginning of Pirkei Avos. Because in the beginning of Pirkei Avos it says, "Al todin es chavercha ad shetagil l'mekomo," that you should not judge your fellow man until you get to his situation. Right? The world has an expression that until you walk a mile in his shoes or something. But interestingly, the way this is understood by most people is not the way the Rishonim understood it. Most people think that means that you can't be judgmental. You see a person, you know, sometimes not a question of a person being a bad guy or a good guy, but you don't understand what the person is doing. So we say, "Oh, listen, we don't know what the situation is like." But the Bar Tanura, in his commentary to this Mishnah, says that when it says "Al todin es chavercha," that you should not judge your fellow man until you get into his situation, he says it means "Al todin es chavercha l'kaf chova," that you should not judge a person negatively until you get into his situation, meaning that you shouldn't judge. You should have a positive a view of people, and you should judge people favorably. So if you judge people favorably, so Chazal is, so what's going on over here? You're supposed to judge people favorably. Here, Rabbi Yeshua has a stranger come into his house, and he takes away the ladder. So it's true that in the end, he was proven to be correct in taking away the ladder. But why was that not a violation of being choshed b'ksherev? So the Chazal here resolve it as follows. The Chazal say, "Lo kasha, kan b'makir, kan b'she'eno makir." So the Chazal say, the resolution is that one is speaking where you know the person, and the other is where you don't know the person. Okay, in other words, the when the Chazal say that you're not supposed to be choshed b'ksherim, so the ksherim word means, the word kosher means a decent person, right? So how do you know he's a decent person? So Chazal here are saying that if you know the person from before, and you know the person is a good person, so then you can't suspect that, you can't suspect him. That's what it means. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu, putting it back to what we had said earlier, so Moshe Rabbeinu with the Klal Yisrael, so even though he had been away from the Klal Yisrael for many years, but he knew pretty much who he was dealing with. So he knew that these are, you know, whatever shortcomings they had when they were in Mitzrayim, and they were definitely succumbed to a lot of the issues, the problems that the Mitzrayim had. But nevertheless, he knew that they were a people of faith, they were a people of Emunah, and thus they were Ksherim as far as he was concerned. Why do you think they're not going to believe you? It's not like they're not strangers. You know who these people are. And so too with the Kohen Gadol, apparently, I guess you would have to say, that the Kohen Gadol also, even though they didn't, you know, it was a difficult era, it was a difficult time, and there were a lot of stukim and perhaps even closet stukim, right? There were people who walked around acting as if they were regular, and then it would turn out that they would beat stukim, and that happened, unfortunately. Gemara in Yuma tells us that happened several times on Yom Kippur. But nevertheless, I assume the pshat is that if they had a feeling for the guy, they were talking to the Kohen Gadol already for several days, so they had some assessment of him, and therefore, if they're makir, they presumably there was reason to believe. In other words, when the Mishnah says they cried, I guess according to this interpretation, you'd have to qualify it and say that in a situation where they had a feeling that they pretty much know he seems like a pretty good guy, so then already it's choshed b'ksherim. Now, that didn't mean they shouldn't do it, because the severity of the Avodah on Yom Kippur mandated that they should do it. However, in that type of case, so then already it enters into Choshet B'Ksherim. But if the person is a stranger, or if the person is someone who you don't know, even not a total stranger, but you just don't know what he's about, so then the Chazal say that that's when we say, "Lo'olam yehei kol adam lefanecha kolistim," that a person who you don't know at all, a person who you don't know at all, you have the right to suspect. You have the right to suspect. I don't know what he's about. He's a total stranger. So in that type of situation, I could be suspicious. This is the way it's resolved here in the Chazal. Here it brings another explanation as well, which is, I believe, very similar. and that it depends if you know the person or not. Okay,
Rabbi,
so,
are we
yes.
Are case why Moshe Rabbeinu should have been with the leprosy?
Should have been.
Are we trying to build a case why he got the leprosy falsely?
Correct. No, we're saying that he got the leprosy deservedly because of the fact that he knew the Klal Yisrael. In other words, even though there's a chance, in other words, there's always a chance. Many things in life are not guaranteed.
According to what we're hearing, it sounds like he should have been saying there's
No, because he knew them. He knew them. He knew the nature of the Klal Yisrael. And knowing the nature of the Klal Yisrael should have led him to believe that, okay, I'm not worried. Hashem is telling me to say this. I should just take it and everything will work out.
We've been building these cases how we shouldn't trust a person.
No, well, I'm saying you have to resist because we have a contradiction. You have in the Chazal, you have one place says you shouldn't and one place says you should. So we have to resolve it. Yes, go ahead.
Today we're on our own and we have to resolve based on what Chazal taught us.
Yeah, okay. That's true. Okay, that's true, right? In other words, Hashem was telling him to do it. That maybe that goes into it also. It's hard to know, although you don't find that he was criticized directly for that. In other words, the criticism was, there's Hashem didn't necessarily tell him that, you know, later it said, V'shamul kolecha, right? But the fact of the matter, I think it was later, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, there was room to possibly suspect, but Moshe was taken to test for this.
So then, in this parsha, then we read very specifically. He says to Paro, "Paro's not going to listen to me. The Jewish people aren't listening to me." So they didn't listen to him. So he was right.
Well, it's not that they didn't listen to him. It's that they said they complained to him. The end of the parsha, the very end of the parsha, what you're referring to is that he said, "Me'oz basi el Paro l'daber b'shmecha heiro l'am hazeh." In other words, Moshe said that I came to speak to Paro, and everything got worse. Everything got worse. So, okay, on some level, that's the beginning of next week's parasha, Parashas Va'era, the second half of the dialogue between Hashem and the parasha cuts off at a very odd place, right at the end of Parashas Shmos, because in the middle of a back and forth between Moshe and Hashem, so on some level, Moshe Rabbeinu was considered a lack of emun on his part. But the fact of the matter is, the Klal Yisrael complains. Not like they didn't believe it. It says that they believed him. It says in the pasuk that they believed him when he performed the miracles. They believed him. So this is the way it's resolved here in the Chazal. In the Rishonim, there's a parish on Pirkei Avos, Bar Shlomo, who says that he makes the distinction a little slightly differently than what it says here in Maseches Kala, and he says that what the Chazal mean is that b'maisa b'peh. When it comes to action, you have to respect everybody. Meaning that if a stranger comes to you, so even though we just learned that the Chazal say that la'olam yehei b'nei adam b'necha kolistim, right? Even though the Chazal say these very strong words, but that doesn't mean you should treat him that way. That doesn't mean that if someone approaches you, a Jew who you've never seen before, you should say, "Get out of here, crook." Right? I don't want to talk to you. You're a dishonest person. You're a suspected criminal. Right? Of course, that's not true. Right? In other words, in action, you have to be mechabit everybody. But when it comes to machshava, when it comes to what a person's thoughts are, so then you have the right to be suspicious. In other words, you have the right to suspect a person, but you have to, in your relationship with that person, not make it apparent that that's what you're doing. You have to honor the person and say, okay, I'm going to treat you as if you're an upstanding person. I'm going to deal with this person as if you're an upstanding person. However, I'm not going to take any risks. I'm not going to take any risks. If the person tries to, you know, entice me to whatever, to give him money or to allow him to, he wants to say, a stranger walks up and says, "Can I borrow your car?" or things of that nature, right? So you don't know. Maybe you'll never see him. He'll drive off with the car. On the other hand, you say, "What do you mean?" But you say, "You're not supposed to be kosher to share." So according to what we're saying, you should be mechabit the person, but you have the right to say, you know, "I'm not really comfortable right now because I don't know you." Now, obviously, it's up to each person's own discretion. If it's the type of thing that you don't care so much, so, all right, fine. But a person has the right. That's not a violation of the concept of choshed b'ksherim. That's not a violation because of the fact that if the person is unknown to you, so then you have the right to be suspicious, or to be, I don't know, suspicious may be too strong of a word, but you have the right to be wary. You have the right to be wary and say, okay, I don't know. You know, I don't know who this person is. I'm not going to, okay, I'll be nice to him. He wants to, he's asking me if he can come over for a meal. Fine, I'll invite him over to my house. I'll invite him for a meal, but I won't leave him alone. I won't leave him alone in the house necessarily if I don't feel comfortable. If I feel comfortable, so that's something else. And that's up to each person to decide. But I have the right to say that. You know, if I'm leaving the house and this guest says, you know, I just want to rest a little bit. So I know you're leaving the house and the house is going to be empty, but if you don't mind, I just want to lie down on the couch for a few minutes. So I have the right to say, you know, with all due respect, I'm not comfortable leaving you here alone in the house. Right? Because of the fact that this is what all of me, that's what Chazal say. You have the right to say, you don't know. You don't know. However, in your basic relationship with this person and the way you deal with him, it should be b'derech kavod. It should always be, even a stranger, you should speak to b'derech kavod. You should speak to respectfully and give him the dignity and so forth and help him out to whatever degree you're comfortable with. But you have the right to draw the line and say that past this point, I am suspicious. Okay, so that is pretty much the way it comes down with Choshed B'Ksherim. Okay, so according to these explanations, so the I guess with the Kohen Gadol, Moshe Rabbeinu, and so forth, so the issue was that the people involved knew who they were dealing with, and still they were suspicious. That's Choshed B'Ksherim. But if the person is a stranger, everyone has the right to protect themselves. Now, what happens, though, it does happen a lot that we are Choshed B'Ksherim, even people who we know. Right, and this is the problem that we have. As I said at the outset, today we live in a very cynical world, and everybody's looking to say bad about everyone else, and I don't know why that is, but it's just an incredible thing that the second anything happens, everybody immediately jumps to conclusions and suspicious of friends, suspicious of people you knew for a long time. Right, so the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos, if you turn over the page, I'm sorry, it's on side one. We have the incident. Another situation of suspicion is the famous incident that's mentioned at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, where Chana came. Chana was childless. The Navi tells us, and she was married to the tzaddik Elkanah, and he had a second wife whose name was Penina, who had many children. And Chana was heartbroken, so she went into the Mishkan and she poured her heart out to Hashem. And in the presence of Eli the Kohen. So it says that we're familiar there. We read this in the Haftarah on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. So it says there that Chana was talking. So it says in the pasuk that Raks Vaseh knows V'kol Lo Yishama, that her lips were moving, but she was saying a silent tefillah. She was not enunciating the words in a way that they were audible. She was saying it quietly, which was not to that point the style of prayer. So it says in the Navi that Vayachshaveh Eli l'shikora, that Eli HaKohen, the Kohen Gadol, saw what was happening and he thought she was drunk. She's moving her lips and no words are coming out. Must be that she's drunk. So he was very upset. What are you doing here? It's a disgrace for the Mishkan that you should be in such a holy place in such a manner. So the Navi tells us that in fact, she responded by saying, "Ishak shas ruach anochi." She said, "No, you make a mistake. It's not true that I am really legitimate, and I'm a person who's very embittered. I have a very, very difficult life, and this is the way I'm praying, but I'm not saying the words out loud." So it says after that that Eli gave her a bracha. Eli blessed her, and the result of that was that she gave birth. A while later, she conceived, and she gave birth to Shmuel, the person who became Shmuel HaNavi, and obviously had this very great tzaddik as a child. So the Gemara here tells us, the Gemara says that on the second line, actually we'll start from the end of the first line, Vatan Chana Vatomer Lo Adoni, she said, "No, my master." She said to him, "Lo odon ato b'davar zeh. You are not the master of this matter. V'lo ruach hakodesh shor alecha. Nor is the divine spirit resting upon you. Sha'ata choshdani b'davar zeh. You're wrong. You suspect." In other words, lo odon. Right now, even though Eli was a navi, he was a prophet, but she said to him, "Your prophecy is not working right now because you think about me that I'm a drunkard, it's not true at all. You missed it. It's not correct. I am a totally fine. I'm just a person who has had many tzaras. Yes. Yeah, that's the famous pshat that the words showed up in the Urim Tumim, the letters Kshera and Shikara are the same letters, just scrambled. So he misunderstood. Well, that's what the Vilna Gaon says, that he misunderstood what it said on the Urim Tumim. But anyway, so it says further that she said to him that you judged me l'kafcho. So, if you skip a few lines, don't you know that I have such a difficult life? I have not consumed any sort of alcoholic beverage. Okay, so the Gemara says from this we learn the following. So the Chazal say that from this we derive an important lesson. Sometimes we do things that look a little suspicious. Sometimes a person does. So we've just said that you're supposed to judge a person favorably, especially if you know them. But let's say the typical case, say you have, you know, in a few weeks it'll be the winter vacation, so we have the grand Aliyah L'Regel that everybody gets in their car and drives up to Orlando, right? There are thousands of Jews going on the Florida Turnpike or whatever, 95, you want to save the tolls, right? And everyone's going in that direction, and you stop at the rest stop and you bump into other people. And you see your neighbor or your friend from shul walking out of McDonald's, right? So looks a little suspicious. Now, the reason why that happened was because of the fact that he needed to use the restroom. So that was the only choice. He went into the McDonald's bathroom, which he was allowed to do. But it does look a little suspicious. So the Gemara says that we derive from Chana that if you're that person, that you should tell the person who sees you, don't be suspicious. In other words, if you're the one coming out of the McDonald's restroom, you should tell, if you bump into somebody, you should say, even though they really have, will soon see they don't have the right to suspect you. But the fact of the matter is, you should head it off by saying, you know, I'm sorry, I needed to use the bathroom, there was no other place to go. Right? So that's something that a person should do. That's what Chana did. But then it says further, it says, if we go down a couple of lines, so it says the last four lines, Vayan Eli, Vayomer, Lechi L'Shalom. So Eli said, go in peace. Omer Rebbe Lazar, Mikan L'choshet Eschaveru, B'davar She'enbo. From this we derive that if you suspect your fellow man in something that was not accurate, Shetzarech L'Faiso, that you have to apologize. If you suspect a person of something which was not accurate, then you have to ask the person for Mechila. You have to go and say, I'm sorry, I feel terrible. I saw what happened. I jumped to a conclusion. The conclusion was not correct. I apologize. Not only that, but you also have to give the person a blessing. Because Eli ended off by giving a bracha to Chana. So this is the flip side of it. In other words, a person is not supposed to be choshed b'ksherim. Invariably, it happens that we are. It's a very difficult halacha to hold by in our times. Very, very difficult not to be suspicious of a person. It's in a lot of areas. It doesn't have to be suspicious of a sin. It could be suspicious of the person didn't act correctly. That the person, you know, you feel that a friend betrayed you or whatever. It doesn't have to be an outright avera. But the suspicion of misdeed. So if you're wrong, you have to go over to the person, ask them for mechila, and not only that, but you have to give them a bracha. This is what we derive from Eli. Okay, so I just wanted to move from there to go into the Mishnah which we quoted before, which says that you have to judge a person favorably. Yes.
You have to ask mechila or a bracha. Is that regardless of? In Ailey's case, there was an accusation on Ailey's part.
Right.
He accused her, and right. She was aware of it, and he apologized.
Right.
Okay, but I'm sitting at my Shabbos table, or whatever, I read an article,
right.
And I don't tell anybody, just in my head, I went through
a I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I imagine if it impacted on the relationship, with the person, then you have to ask the mechila. If it didn't, if it never amounted to anything, in other words, you suspected them, and then a few days later you read a different article which led you to believe that they were innocent. Okay, so then I guess you don't. I'm not sure. But it happens a lot. It happens. I just want to say this happens in family situations, Right? As a parent, you come in, who made the mess over here? Right? And then you know, oh, you get all bent out of shape, and then the child says, Mom, it was you. Right? So, oh, yeah, you're right. Right? So what do you do? What do you in a situation like that? That's Choshev B'Kshayim. That's Choshev B'Kshayim. In other words, why did you have the... So now you'll say, maybe in some cases it's not. If you know that this always happens, this child always does it, maybe so. But it could happen even in a family situation that it's not correct. You have to ask the person for mechila. You have to ask the person. I have many times asked my children for mechila based on this. Of things that they gave a lot of brachas. You know, I'm not quite like a chassidus rebbe, but I've given many brachas because of the fact that I have been guilty of this many times myself. Yes. Yeah.
Well, the Maisa, the Kohen Gadol said, medicine, I know the Pesach and the Halacha, this is how I act.
Yeah.
And they would, in theory, have to say, then we're sorry to be chayshish you, we give a bracha.
Yeah.
Even where the Maisa, at the end of the day, if you walked out alive, because the Raya was, whether he made it out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim,
right.
Then you would think they would come back.
So maybe they did. It could
right,
be.
So you're missing all these.
Right. Okay. You're right. It's true. I imagine it's hard to piece it all together. This is not discussed in a lot of places. I had to pull together a lot of different things. Basically, what I think is that because of the difficulty that was going on in the Tekufa, the second base of Migdash, so there was so much room for suspicion. There was so much riding on the Avod of Yom Kippur that even, I guess they felt that even though they have a good feeling about the person, but you just can't take any chances. They had closet stukim. The Gemara speaks about it. Gemara in Yuma says there was a guy who went in there, a Kohen Gadol, went in, and he pulled it off. He did the Ketores outside, and he went in at Stuki. He went in. I don't know. It doesn't say in the Gemara what happened to the string turned white. Doesn't say. But the fact of the matter is he came out, and he told his father what he did. He was proud of himself that here he was Mosen Nefesh to do what the Stukim said, which was a disgrace. So the Gemara says that a short time after that, he suddenly passed away. Not everyone died. Not everyone. The famous rope around the leg of Kohen Gadol didn't happen to everybody at the time. But the fact of the matter, that's what they were worried about. That's what they were worried about. So I guess it was so prevalent that you couldn't take any chances. But you're right. The details are missing. Yeah. Go ahead.
He expressed his thoughts.
He expressed it. Yes.
Does the word choshe mean expressing, or is it just in your mind?
That's what Flamel said. I'm not 100% sure. Okay, so now we come finally to this area where the Mishnah says that Al Todin es Chavercha Ad Shetagilum Koma, which we said before, means you should not judge your friend L'chova. You should not judge your fellow man negatively without knowing the whole situation. So this is that we have another pasuk. We have actually a pasuk in the Torah that says, "B'tzedek tishpot amisecha," that you should judge your friend with righteousness, which the Chazal interpreted to mean that you should judge your fellow man in a positive way. If a person did something and it's unclear what they did, you should be positive. So, just in the interest of saving time, there's a whole thing here in the Rabbeinu Yonah, which is on the sheet. But I'm not going to. I'll just read a brief excerpt. So he says, what does it mean? What does it mean at the end of the first little column all the way on the right? So he says the following, that when it comes to judge a person favorably, there are different classifications. So the first thing is he says that three lines down, he says, v'makirin osov hu ish beinani, that if you know the person, that he's an average person, meaning pa'amim osa ra u pa'amim osa tov. Let's say you have a person, you say like the common man, meaning that, you know, okay, he does the right thing a lot of times, sometimes does the wrong thing, could, you know, not what we would necessarily call a tzaddik. So it says, the imyasa dover sheyesh ledonu l'kav kovu yesh l'schus b'shikol, that if he did something, if that person, we're talking here about the average person, did something that could be either way, it could be, you could interpret it that it was bad, or you can interpret it favorably, or even if it looks a little bit more suspicious than good, it looks like the person, you know, it's a questionable what just happened. The person just did something. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, he says, in Mishum Inyin Yochel Adonu L'schus, Yesh Lo Lomar L'tov V'Nischavin. So in such a situation, you have to judge the person favorably. In other words, not only Do you have to judge a person favorably if it's 50-50? That it could be, okay, I'm not sure what just happened. It could be that it was that he did the right thing. Right, you see the fellow walking out of McDonald's or whatever it may be, similar situations. See a person just engaged in something which looks a little suspicious, okay? But it could be that there was nothing wrong. You don't know. You don't know. So in that situation, so Rabbeinu Yonah says, and this is the halacha, Rabbeinu Yonah says, you're obligated to judge the person favorably. That you cannot come to, even the, if it appears more likely that it was a wrong thing, it was a misdeed what the person did, nevertheless, you have to judge the person favorably. And he says further, and he says that if he, on the third line in the middle paragraph, he says, "Avol ein advarim b'tzadik gomer v'lo b'rosh gomer." He says, but that's not the same rule by a person who's a tzadik gomer or a complete tzadik, complete rasha. He says, "Ki at tzadik afilu b'maisa shekulo ra." Even if you see a person who you hold to be a very good person, a righteous person, a person who has a chazaka of being a very good person, and he did something which is quite apparent that it was wrong. It's quite apparent. There's no very difficult to give a positive spin on this, right? And it looks bad from every angle, every way you think of it. You can't find. I don't know. I can't explain this. I see the person just did something. It's inexplicable. I can't understand it. Says the Rabbeinu Yonah Yedineu Latova that you still have to judge this person favorably. Now, how are you going to judge him favorably? We just said there's nothing, there's no positive spin you could put on it. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, no, there is. Because Lamar, you should say, Kishkogahaisa, Shiyotsimu Fnashad. He made a mistake. Okay, made a mistake. No one's perfect. And even a righteous person could slip sometimes. So he made a mistake. Vihine Nicham, Vihibit, Ubikesh Mechila. That we assume that even though it seems, it's pretty obvious to me the guy didn't have it. It's obvious. I thought about it. I can't find a way to put a positive spin on it. But this person is a very good person. He's the rabbi. Okay. I just saw something or I just heard something or whatever. And I can't imagine. And it's impossible to be dan l'kaf schus. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, by such a person, you still have to be dan l'kaf schus. Not that you should naively say that, oh, it must have been a good thing that he did, but I don't know, because you can't think of any way it could be good. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, no, that's not, you don't have to be a fool. Rather, you should say, okay, he messed up. He messed up, not perfect, but he probably did tshuva. I assume either he did it by accident, whatever, he slipped, and I'm sure now he regrets it, and he asked Hashem for forgiveness. Like the Gemara tells us, in Ra'isa Talmud Chacham Sha'avra Avera Balaila, that if you see in the evening a Talmud Chacham do an Avera, you know he did an Avera. There's no question that he did an Avera. Al Taharer Achrav. So the Gemara says you should not lose respect for him. Why not? He said the Gemara concludes, because of the fact, Shema Asa Tshuva, so the words in the Gemara are, the next day, Bayom, you shouldn't allow it to affect your opinion of him, because maybe he did Tshuva. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, maybe he did Tshuva? What does that mean? So the Gemara clarifies, Aleima Vadai Asa Tshuva. Okay, in other words, that you should assume he did Tshuva. You should, in other words, we don't have to always be naive, but this is a very important thing, and people today, especially, where we're always looking to tear down, especially from the respected ones. They're the first ones that we go, ah, is rabbi, look at that, phony, I knew it, he's a phony. See that? Right? I knew all these years, because last night I saw something, and it's very, very, very suspicious, and there's no way. It had to be that he did something wrong. So the Gemara says, okay. So you could assume that. However, when you wake up the next morning and you see him, you should still give him the same Shalom Aleichem, because of the fact that you should assume that he regrets it and he made a mistake. He made a mistake. It happens. People mess up. Everyone does. So therefore, he slipped. He slipped. He did something wrong. And vaday osa tshuva, that he did tshuva. So he did tshuva. He can't hold it against him. This is the thing that we can't come to terms with. We have a very hard time in our lives coming to terms with this, that God's tshuva is a remarkable thing, right? Hashem will forgive a person, even if he did the biggest avera. Hashem will forgive him. Hashem will forgive him, and then it's forget it. You know, it's off the books. We don't talk about it anymore. It's done. We turn the page. It's over. It's over. Goodbye. Finish. You're not allowed to bring it up. You're not allowed to mention it, right? A person who's chosen to you're not allowed to say to him. The Gemara says in Bamasi, you're not allowed to say to him, oh, when you were young, you did this, that, and the other thing. It's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant, because who cares? It's finished. Hashem forgave him. So it's over. It's over. What are you bringing that up for? It's nothing to do with anything. So the same thing is true. The same thing is true that, you know, we're ready to accept the person who's chosen b'tshuva from the masses, but we're not ready to accept a person, you know, this person in the shul, one of the officers of the shul. Ah, you see that? Look at that. Now we got him. He's brought up on charges or whatever it is. Must be immediately. He's no good. If he's muhsuk, if the person has a good reputation, so you have to judge him favorably. You have to judge him favorably. Now, all of this being said, this is on the bottom, I copied out of the Encyclopedia Talmudis, right, that he says that, it's actually the copy is, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically he says these kloam, that you have so again, to summarize, with an Adam Beinoni, with an average person, not even a tzaddik, with an average person, you have to judge the person favorably, even if what he did seems more suspicious than good. In other words, if there's, let's say, 60% chance that what he did was not proper, and only a 40% or 70% chance, and 30% chance that it was proper, you still have to give him the benefit of the doubt. Okay, who says? How do you know? But if the person is held to be a tzaddik, now a tzaddik doesn't mean necessarily just the gadol hador, you know, this, well, right, you can negate the whole thing. We don't have tzaddikim bismanas there. You know, you'll say that. That's not true. The halakha is true today also. If a person has a good reputation, and a person is known to be an upstanding person, so the fact that they may have slipped and did something wrong, so unfortunately that's part of human experience. It happens sometimes. Yeah, but I'm not justifying it, and I'm not saying that you should assume it's true by everybody. But if it happens, so yeah, okay. So he did tshuva. He did the wrong thing. Okay, right. Anyway, what could you do? You have no right to be down that personal kafchov anymore. So these are some of the inyanim. This, as I say, it's a halakhic issue and it's a musar issue as well. But it's very relevant in our times because we have this all the time, and with the prevalence of the media and the electronic media, where any time anything happens, a rabbi sneezes in the middle of his drusha, and already somebody's suspecting that he snorted cocaine right beforehand, right? And that's why he sneezed, right? You say, where did you get that from? I don't know, but he never sneezed by any other drusha. So it must be, right? So, okay, where do you have the right to say? That's ridiculous. You can't say that. People love doing this. People love, unfortunately, it's a human nature. People love doing this. Mom is wrong. It's wrong. Yeah, no, and even if you know, okay, he did. Now, sometimes it depends what happened. Obviously, sometimes a person could do something which was so wrong that you say that, okay, I don't think we can continue, even if he did tshuva, but I'm not comfortable continuing with that person in this role. In other words, that maybe, all right, you know, maybe if he's the rabbi, he shouldn't be giving the musa to people, you know, he seems to have issues of his own, and therefore, even if he's working on them, but maybe he's not appropriate, maybe he's not fitting. So that's a difficult judgment that has to be made with chachamim. But the reality is that for an isolated incident of no major consequence, right? Isolated, I'll just take an example at the top of my head. You're walking by the movie theater, Motzei Shabbos, right? And lo and behold, the rabbi walks out, right? And, you know, and you look up, know what's playing over here, and you look at the thing, not so good, right? So what do you say in a situation like that? So you say, well, what did he needed to use the bathroom? Can't be. There's a bathroom right next door, right? He lives around the corner. It can't be. What else did he go in there for? He went in there to be makar of somebody, right? Or not, right? To see if somebody need a minyan, make a baruchu, right? What did he go in there for, right? So, okay, it's very suspicious. So you have to say, okay. If you see it repeats itself and it keeps happening over and over and over, so then already maybe you have to think otherwise. But okay, I'm not justifying. I'm just giving a basic example. So I would just end off with the classical question that everybody has when you have the, right, in the middle of supper, you have the mishulach, the ubiquitous mishulach that it comes to the door and ask you for money. So do you have the right to suspect? You know, unfortunately, you do hear from time to time stories that there's dishonesty that takes place. Do you have the right to suspect or not? So basically, I think that we do have in the Gemara and the Bava Basra, actually, we're learning here in the Yeshiva this year on Daf Tes, So the Gemara tells us a halacha. It's brought in the Shulchan Aruch here in the Hilchas Tzedakah that the Shulchan Aruch says that Misha Ba V'Amar Hechiluni, a person who comes and says, "I don't have food. I need food. I'm hungry. I need food. I don't have money to pay for my food." So it says, "Ain Bol Kinachrov." You give him no questions asked, because the lack of food, hunger, is a tsar haguf. It's a physical pain. And if a person comes with that, you have no right to even, you can't ask them any questions. You just have to give them. You just have to give them. Okay. However, he says that if he's coming for other matters, if he's coming for, let's say, clothing or something like that, so then, Bolk and Achrav, you have the right to investigate. So nowadays, they instituted already for many years a good system that people come, when they come with collecting tzedakah, so they come with what's called a hamlatza. Person comes with a letter of certification. That's a very good thing. That in every community, they have somebody that, I don't know exactly who does it, but somebody that should sort of screen the person. So my own personal feeling is that, Alpi Din, it seems from the Gemara that you're not mechuyev to give a person other than for food unless you know the person is legitimate. So if the person has a letter, so then it's legitimate. In other words, assuming you recognize who the letter's from, you don't have to assume it's a forgery, and you'll say maybe they didn't check it out so well. Look, it's their job to check it out. But quite frankly, if it's just a matter of a few dollars, then any person who comes to the door, I would imagine the embarrassment of having to do such a thing is so great that, it's true that from time to time there are dishonest people that do it, but I don't think that's the majority of the cases. And in such a situation, so it's pashut that the person, I would assume should give them. If a person's asking for a large amount of money, I had an incident. I'll just end up on this. I had an incident years ago. It was a very challenging thing. Before I was married, so I was actually out on a date, and I was walking in Midtown Manhattan, and a man walked up to me and said, I'm here from Israel, an Israeli accent, I'm here from Israel, and I was staying in a hotel, and they're telling me to leave because they won't take my Israeli credit card, and the banks are all closed now, I can't get cash, so can you please help me out? So I was a little naive at the time, I wanted a lot of money, I was a little naive, and I was also being judged at that moment, not by Hashem, but by the person I was with. So I was under the pressure at the moment, so I quite frankly don't remember exactly